Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today your is Psochim Daf Yud Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's Shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 21 lines from the top. You might notice in the middle of the page, at the end of a line, you'll see a triangle with a colored in tip to it. That will be our beginning point. Before we begin the Gemara, we glance at the side under our Mivneh heading, and we should point out that we left off our previous shiur kind of in the middle of a discussion. So to get the maximum benefit of today's shiur, it's very important that you are quite familiar with the material we were dealing with in our previous shiur. On that note, we glance at the side under our Mivneh heading, where you notice triangles appearing in two different directions. These represent Shnei Kushyos al Shnei HaKlolim, Aleph and Beis, Sheiniach Abaye B'tshuva Shelo. So what we do, we glance above, and you'll notice under Abaye's name, Abaye appeared in a crown shape about 10 lines from the top. You'll notice there's an Aleph in a diamond under above the expression Chodosh, Chodosh Bodil Mine, and as a result of that, meaning the new grains, as we explained at length in our previous year, the new grains is something that we don't have to impose a gzeirah, we don't have to impose any restriction because he has been, Bodil Mineh, has been separated from them for the last several months. Therefore, there is no need to impose a gzeirah, as was discussed in our previous year. As opposed to Chometz, where you notice the Beis diamond there above, you notice Chometz lo Bodil Mineh, and therefore in a case of Chometz where you are haven't been separated from it. 1 hour you're eating it, next hour you're already not eating it. Therefore, there was a need for making a gezerah. Those two principles, namely bodo mine, no need for gezerah, lo bodo mine, a need for gezerah, those two principles will be called into question. The first triangle you could see in the Gemara, it reads v'chol hecha de lo bodo mine mi gozar. This is a question on the Beis principle above that Abaye had said. If you skim down the page to three lines from the bottom, you'll see there the Gemara says, V'chol hecha de bodil mine lo gozar, and is it so that where you had been separated from it, a no gezera is made? That was reflected in the first point that Abaye had made. So we've laid out the map of the sugya. With all of that in mind, let us now turn to the Gemara itself. The Gemara asks, V'chol hecha de lo bodil mine mi gozar Reb Yehuda? Is it so that wherever a person is not separated from something, where he's been using it up till this point, Reb Yehuda makes a gzeira? Is that really so? V'hotnan? We raise a question from a Tanaic source, from the realm of Shabbos, and it says in this source, Lo yikov odom shvoferes shel beitzo, v'malaino shemen, v'yitneno betzad haner, b'shvil shete menateves. This source might appear familiar to some of you who are accustomed to reading the Bameh Madlikin section on Friday night in Shul, which features the Mishnayos of the second perek of Shabbos, and it says that one should not pierce an eggshell, fill it with oil, and put it next to a burning wick, and the dripping oil will serve as fuel to that. B'shil shetei menateves is it so that it will drip the hole in the eggshell holding the oil. The oil will drip through that hole, fueling the wick. V'afilu hi shel cheres. Even if the nair is made of earthenware. Earthenware is something that's disgusting. Actually, Rashi says, "Vapili shecheres oiso shvoferes." The shvoferes is not made of an eggshell, but rather is made of of earthenware, and earthenware having oil soaking it becomes disgusting. Rashi says, "Afilu hochi osur dilmos lemecha mine." There's still a fear that you might come to draw the oil from it, and drawing oil from a receptacle that's serving as a supply for a burning wick, that is an isser of Shabbos. It's an isser mechabe. It's an isser to. It's called extinguishing. So the Mishnah there says, even if it's made of cheres, you shall not make this setup. Rabbi Yehuda matir. Now this is the key thing. We've dashed underline Rabbi Yehuda. He allows the setting up of an eggshell or of a shell, even if it's made of cheres. He does not fear your drawing from the oil. So what do we see? We see that even though the shemen, the oil, is something everyone is accustomed to using, it's something that's lo bodil mine, yet he does not make a gzera. So that's a question. The Gemara answers, Hosom mishum chumra de Shabbos mivdel bedili. Here, because Shabbos is in question, it's an issue concerning Shabbos. Shabbos is a very severe area of law. It could result in a capital punishment if someone is in violation of Shabbos. Therefore, people are careful and will separate, will stay away. That's Mivdal Bedili. They stay away. Therefore, there is no need, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to impose any restriction regarding the setting up of the oil receptacle dripping into a burning, fueling a burning wick. We have now a very interesting structural note. You have a bracketed section. Notice the bracket length indicator showing you how far down this goes, and you'll notice it goes to the third line from the bottom. The note on the side where you have a star, it says Matras HaSugrayim, the purpose of these brackets, Kedei Litzo Retzef Bein HaKushos Al HaKlolim Aleph and Beis Shiniach Habayi B'Tshuvasa. What we want to do is establish a sense of continuity between the questions that we ask on Abaye's principles above, the Aleph and Beis principles. The truth is the Gemara is working out of order. It focuses its question first on the Beis principle of Abaye, and at the bottom of the page, three lines from the bottom, the question is focused on the Aleph principle. But that's what we want to accomplish with these brackets. Later, then we go back to the bracketed section and raise another issue or series of questions. Under what circumstances do we make gezeros? Do we impose restrictions? So we will see a seeming contradiction within the general realm of Hilchos Shabbos. Sometimes we make a gzera, sometimes we don't make a gzera. And then we'll find a seeming contradiction within the realm of making knots on Shabbos. But all of that is contained within the bracketed section. So that having been said, let us momentarily skip the bracketed section to continue the theme of questions and hopefully answers regarding Abaye's points above. So now we go three lines from the bottom in the Gemara where the inverted triangle appears, and we read, V'chol hecha de bodil minei lo gozar Reb Yehuda. Now let's go back again. Abaye, notice the Aleph. What did Abaye say? Abaye said above, Chodosh is a realm of where people are bodil minei. They haven't been involved with consuming the new grains for the last few months. Therefore, there's no need to impose the gezero that was discussed in our previous shiur. So therefore, that's grounds for leniency. And now we bring that into question. So let's read the Gemara. Three lines from the bottom. V'chol hecha de bodil minei lo gozar Reb Yehuda. Is that really so where you are not separated from the issue that gives us reason for leniency, and Reb Yehuda would not impose a gezeirah for Tanya? We have the following source. This source introduces the realm of kochim, that which is sanctified in a sacrificial sense. So the realm of kochim is something that people stay away from. Personal benefit from something that's been sanctified is considered a sin, and people treat sacrificial matters, those items that are sanctified, they treat that with seriousness and stay away from them. So, yet we see in that backdrop that people are bodil from kochim. It says, This source deals with a bechor, a firstborn male animal, which is something that has sanctity to it and is eventually offered as a sacrifice. Bechor she'ochsoi dam, a bechor, firstborn animal, that developed a health problem. Ochso dam is an expression referring to a malady of some kind that requires bloodletting. Afilu hu meis, even if this malady is life-threatening to the animal, ein mekizin lo dam, divrei Rebbe Yehuda, we will not bloodlet the animal, and that's Rebbe Yehuda's point, and we dashed under on Rebbe Yehuda, he is the focus of our attention. V'chachomim omrim yakiz ubevad shele yatil boi mum. The Chachom said you can bloodlet, provided that in the course of bloodletting you don't impose a blemish on the animal. Let's though focus on Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda says even if the animal is going to die, do not bloodlet. Why not? We say like this, even if you're going to bloodlet in a place on the animal that it would not cause the animal to blemish, but nevertheless, if we allow any bloodletting, you might come to bloodlet on a spot of the animal that could result in the making of a blemish. And it's forbidden to make a blemish on an animal of kachim, and specifically on a bechor. So what do we see? We see, according to Rebbe Yehuda, even though you have a realm of people being bodo minei, nevertheless he imposes a gezeira, he imposes a restriction. Don't bloodlet, even in a safe zone, because you might come to do it in a wrongful zone. The Gemara will answer the question at the bottom line. Hosa mitoch she'odam bol al mamono. Since a person is preoccupied or is all consumed because of his mamon, his holdings. In this case, we're talking about a kohen. He's the one that receives the bechor in the first place, so it becomes his possession. And since he sees the animal is very ill, we figure amrinon ishoris lei b'mokum shein oisin boimum. If we allow him, the kohen, to bloodlet in a safe zone, a place that a blemish is not going to form, osi levet b'mokum shein boimum, he'll end up making a bloodletting in a place that a blemish will be the result. Later in the Gemara, questions will be raised on this, and we'll wait for that when we get back to this point and end up reading the Gemara again. All that having been said, we saw how the Gemara is interested in asking questions on the two principles of Abaye above, and in the most recent discussion in the Gemara prior to the bracketed section, we saw a topic of Hilchus Shabbos raised regarding the oil holder, oil receptacle, and a dripping, and Rebbe Yehuda being lenient. And the Gemara answered how Rebbe Yehuda is lenient there, even though it's a case of lo bodil minei. And that was because of the Chumrah of Shabbos. Now, within the brackets, we are going to be raising, and the house shape introduces these stiros within the realm of Shabbos in general terms, and then later a stira within the realm of making knots. So the Gemara asks, in the bracket, second to last narrow line of the Gemara, V'rami de Shabbos a Shabbos. Let us raise a seeming contradiction within the realm of Hilchus Shabbos, de Sanya. We're calling this, you'll notice there's a little base with a volcano shape around it. This is in order to help you see easily. This source is to be contrasted with the source marked Aleph, also in a volcano shape a few lines above. So in this source it says, Chevel Dli, the rope holding a pail that's lowered into a well, Shenifsak, and the rope snapped. Lo yehe koshro ela onvo. Do not tie it, but rather make a bow. The making of a bow is allowed, and we don't make a gzeira, we don't impose a restriction of making the aniva, because if we allow you to do that, you'll come to make a knot as well. And it goes without saying that making a knot on Shabbos is considered a violation of an av melacha, of a primary form of melacha. The Tanakhama, though, says, listen, go ahead, make an aniva, make a bow, which is not a knot, it's more like you tie your shoes with a bow. Do that, but don't make an actual knot. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Kore Chalov Punda Opiskia, you wrap around the snap rope these other items, these are, we'll call them other materials, you wrap around, but do not make a bow. So we'll allow you to wrap around something to enable you to fuse the two ends of the rope that snap. That's the korechel of wrap around in punda opiskia, which we'll say for our purposes, Rashi gives you a French word for these. The punda is a type of hollow belt, and a piskia is something that might be termed a garter. So you can take these items and wrap around the rope, fusing them together, but do not make a bow. And why not make a bow? So it would seem at this point, because if we allow you to make a bow, you might come to make a knot. So here in the realm of Shabbos, Rebuta is gozer. In the case of the Shvoferis, so he did not make a gzera. Kasha, Rebuta, Ad Rebuta. We would seem to be a stira between within Rebuta's regarding the kshira and the where by kshira he was gozer, and by the oil he was not gozer. Kasha de Rabbonan ad Rabbonan, and we also have a seeming stira within the realm of the Rabbonan, namely in the case of the shoferis they did make gzera, they imposed gzera, and in the case of the kshira they allow you to make an eva, not gozer. That's the question. The Gemara answers, Rabbonan ad Rabbonan lo kasha. Within the realm of the Rabbonan, there is really no inconsistency. Shemen b'shemen michlaf. People can easily confuse oils. If we allow you to use the oil in one case, you'll come to use the oil in another case. Therefore, don't draw from oil, even if it's disgusting. Because if you end up using this, you'll end up drawing from oil that's not disgusting, and that would be already an iser of mechabe. In other words, according to the Rabbonan, people are used to using shemen. So people will say, I use shemen anyway. I pour shemen from a bottle. I pour oil out from a bottle. What difference does it make if I pour from a bottle or I draw from this shemen receptacle that's currently dripping on a flame? Well, that's a problem. So we have to make a rule that since people are so accustomed to using oil, this being that this in the case of the dripping oil onto the burning wick, this we have to rule is usser. Aniva b'kshira lo michlef. By allowing people to make bows, people will not come to making a knot. Therefore, we're not taking our chances by allowing you to make a bow. Rebuta ad Rebuta lo kashya. Regarding the seeming stira in Rebuta's, there really is no question. In general, Rebuta does not make a gzera. However, with regard to the making of a bow, that's not a function of the restriction of making a bow is not a function of your coming to do something worse. But the bow itself is a problem. It itself, in Reb Yudah's opinion, is considered a knot. Let's read this now in the words of the Gemara. Taimo de Reb Yehuda lav mishum de gozer aniva otukshira. The reason behind Reb Yudah banning the aniva is not because he makes a gzera that if we allow you to do aniva, you'll come to make a knot. Elo mishum de kosovar aniva gufo kshira hi, rather. Reb Yudah is of the opinion that the aniva itself is a kshira, is making a knot. It's the same category, and therefore the aniva is not a reflection of a gzera, but rather it is iser itself. However, where you're dealing with things that are issues of gzera, so Reb Yudah will be lenient. Before we continue, let's just, for the sake of clarity, review the Shitas Chachomim, the Rabbonin, where the Gemara said, the Rabbonin, the Rabbonin, lo kashya, shemen, b'shemen, michlaf, since people are so accustomed to using oil through the year, they do not allow you to set up the eggshell oil drip in the first place, because you might come to draw oil from that setup. Therefore, don't set it up in the first place, because drawing oil from such a setup will be, in fact, an Isur Mechabe. We pick up the Gemara where we have another house marking, Verami Rabbonon Ad Rabbonon. We seem to have a stira within the Shitas Rabbonon regarding their Gezeira making. Before, above, we saw the Rabbonon would not go there in the case of the Aniva Otukshira. And here we will see the Rabbonon making a Gzeira within the realm of making knots. So let's see the Gemara. And the question itself lasts a couple of lines. V'romi Rabbonon ad Rabbonon, disnan, koshrin v'li b'piskya, avoloi b'chevel, Rabbi Yehuda matir. First we translate the source. Rabbonon say that you can knot a pail using a piskia, but not using a chevel. A chevel is a rope. So we see, and as we've dashed underline, avoloi b'chevel. They do not allow you to knot using a chevel. Rabbi Yehuda is mekel, he allows. Chevel demai. What kind of chevel are we talking about? As we said, the word chevel in general translates as a rope. If you're talking about a standard rope, a pail, as we said, is used for drawing water from a well, and the well is deep down, you have to tie a long rope to the pail. If the rope snapped, would anyone allow the tying, the knotting of that on Shabbos? Rabbi Yehuda matir kesher shel kayomahu. Would Rabbi Yehuda allow that if it were chevel de'alma, a standard rope? How could Rabbi Yehuda reflect an opinion of allowance? That kind of knot is a permanent knot. Devadai osi livtule, a person will certainly leave it there. That's the rope that's designed for the use of the pail. If it's snapped, you will certainly, and make a knot, you're going to leave it there. Actually, we don't necessarily have to talk about the rope snapping, but simply tying a rope to the pail. So that if you are talking about a regular rope, and you tie it to the pail, you're going to leave it there permanently. Ela pshita de gardi. So therefore, we must be talking about a rope that's used by a weaver. A weaver's rope. That's something that you might attach it to the pail for right now, just to draw some water, but after you're finished using it, you're going to untie it, because you need the chevel, the gardi, the weaver needs this rope for other things. Being that it's not a permanent knot, it doesn't come under the prohibition of Shabbos. Certainly not. There is no Isur Doraisa in making a knot that's not permanent. So Rabbi Yehuda is seemingly, he's mekil. The Gozru Rabbonon, and yet we see that the Rabbonon imposed a gzera. Chevel de gardi otu, chevel de alma. Don't attach the pail using a chevel de gardi chevel, even though it's not a permanent kind of knot, because if we allow that, you're going to come to use a regular rope and attaching it to the pail, resulting in an isur doraisa. What do we see from this? We see the Rabbonon do make a gzera within the realm of kshira. And above, notice we have a double star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, so align this with what you see above. There the Rabbonon said, go ahead, make the aniva, make the bow, and we're not choshesh, you might come to make a knot. So there the Rabbonon were lax, were lenient. And here the Rabbonon are restrictive. The Gemara says, this is true, there is really no contradiction, but rather there's a reasonable explanation. Chevel bechevel michlif, different kinds of ropes people can confuse with one another. So we don't want you to use a chevel de gardi, because you'll come to use a chevel de alma, a regular rope. And that would result in an isur doraisa. Aniva b'kshira lo michlifa, the fact that we allow people to make bows people will not confuse that with making knots. Therefore, in terms of making a bow, the Rabbanon were relaxed, they were lenient. As we pointed out earlier, we now go back to the principles that Abaye had laid down, and we're going to bring this, the first of his two principles into question. And is it really so that where a person is bodil mine, where he stays away from something, or he keeps his distance, the Rabbi Yehuda does not impose a gzeira? Do we not have the following Tanaic source? B'chor shoch so dam, afilu humes, ein mekizin lo dam de Rabbi Yehuda. A b'chor, the firstborn male animal, that's of a holy nature, that's its nature. It's something people are bodil mine. Even if its life is being threatened, we will not allow you to bloodlet. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. V'chachomim omrim, yakiz, go ahead and bloodlet. Uvad shelo yatil bomum. Just be careful, don't do the bloodletting in a part of the animal that a blemish would result. As we said before, there is a prohibition of imposing blemishes on holy animals, and specifically on the Bechor. So what do we see from here? We see that even though you're dealing with something that a person is baldeline, Rebbe Yehuda imposes a gzera. Use the little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and align it with the arrow you see way above. There Abaye described chodosh as being something that a person is bodo mine, and that's the reason for no gzera. Here you have kochim, which is a realm of people that are bodo, and he does make a gzera. The Gemara answers, hasam, in the case of the bechor that has been given to the kohen, it becomes the kohen's possession. And we have a rule, mitoch shodom bohul, the Gemara continues on the top of Omid Beis, al mamono, since a person is, when he sees that his money is, or his possessions are being threatened, he loses himself, he loses his concentration abilities, and amrinon, we say as follows, yishoris lebamokam sheinoisin bomum, if we allow him to even get started and bloodlet in a place of the animal that a mum will not result, as we said, he'll lose himself and bloodlet also in a spot that a permanent scar or a blemish would result. We have a very short bracketed section, and if we skip the brackets momentarily, this is in order to focus on Shitas Rebbe Yehuda, to maintain a continuity in Shitas Rebbe Yehuda. And the question here lasts a number of lines, so we'll just begin the question. Omi amrinon l'Rebbe Yehuda odom bol al mamono? Is this concept of a person becoming confounded when it comes to his possessions being at risk, is that a reality within Rebbe Yehuda? And therefore, he will make a gezerah. We will bring that into question and show that no, that doesn't seem to be the case. Let's go back, before we go further in the Gemara, to the short bracketed section, which was dealing with the bloodletting of a Bechor. We saw the explanation for Rebbe Yehuda's restriction. And what about the explanation of the Rabbonon, where we saw in the source at the bottom of Omen Aleph, the Rabbonon had said, Yakiz ubevat shel yata b'mum. So the Gemara explains in the brackets, V'Rabbonon, Kol shekein di lo shoris lei, well, all the more so if you restrict him, the lo shoris lei klal, if you restrict him completely, osi lemevad, he will certainly come to make a blemish. So the Rabbonin adopt the psychology that say, give him a little leeway, let him bloodlet, as opposed to restricting him completely. Because if you restrict him completely, he'll totally lose himself and come to impose through the bloodletting, he'll come to impose a blemish. The Gemara continues, fourth line from the top, after the brackets, Umi Amrinon L'Rebbe Yehuda Odom Bol Amamono. We pointed out this was a long question that we're starting now. Is that so, that Odom Bol Amamono, and as a result of that, a restriction is imposed regarding different actions? V'ha Tanan, we have the following source, Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Ein mekardin habehemo biyom tov mnei shehu oise chabura. One is not allowed to engage in the Makardin process. This source discusses different forms of combing animals. We'll be more specific as we go on in the Gemara, but the Rabbi Yehuda is saying we don't allow Makardin on Yom Tov because that will impose a wound on the animal, and making wounds on animals on Yom Tov, other than the actual slaughtering of animals, is something prohibited to do. Avol Mekartzifin, but we allow Mekartzifin. And what's the main point over here? No gezeira is made. We don't restrict kirtzuf in anticipation of coming to do kirud. V'chachomim omrim ein mekardin af ein mekartzifin. The chomim are quite restrictive. We don't allow even mekartzifin, which is seemingly an easier thing to allow. V'tanya, ezu kidur, ezu kirtzuf. What are these different procedures? Kidur tanim, v'oisin chabura. Kidur is the use of a comb that has fine teeth. And by virtue of the fact that they have fine teeth, that's kitanim. They're small. They will also, they're also likely to make an injury in the animal. Scrape it, scratch it, and cause blood to flow. And that's strictly forbidden on Yom Tov. Kirtzuf equals gedolim vein oisin chabura. It's a large toothed comb. It would appear that the teeth of such a comb are rather blunt, and they will not impose an injury on the animal. So what is the point over here? Here we have a case of it's a person's momon, a person's possession, it's his animal, and Rabbi Yehuda does not impose a gzeira. Yet we saw earlier that because of Odom Bohla Mamono, so we said the Kohen, in the case of the Bechor, should not bloodlet whatsoever. So the Gemara answers, Hossam, in the case of the Bechor, where we were restrictive, we didn't allow you to get started, even in a Mokum Shein Oisin Bomum, the Ishavik Lei Mayis, because the circumstances there were the animal, if you don't tend to it, it will die. So where a person sees his Mamon, his possession, at the risk of total loss, Adam Bola Mamono. There we apply the principle of a person being Bola Mamono, and we really tie his hand, so to speak. We restrict him altogether. Hacha, in the case of the combing of the animal, Ishavikle, if you were, let's say, to leave the animal be. Tsaro Biamahu, Lo Amrinon, Adam Bola Mamono. There the animal might suffer from the hair that's not been combed. It might cause him some pain. However, that's not enough to create the principle of Odom Bol Amamono, or to apply the principle in that particular case. And since he's not Bol Amamono, Rabbi Yehuda feels we can allow him to do the Kirtzuf, which doesn't itself result in a chabura. But as far as Makardin is concerned, that itself makes a chabura, and hence it's forbidden. The Gemara asks, Rabbi Yehuda, Maishno gabi chometz de gozar, umaishno gabi kirtzuf de lo gozar. According to Rabbi Yehuda, why is it that with regard to chometz, we said after the Shas Iser, after the hour of prohibition sets in, do not check. Because if we allow you to check, and it's already the Zman of Iser, you'll come to eat it. So Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of Chometz, makes a Gzera. Umayshon gabi kirtzuf de lo gozar. And here in this case, he doesn't prohibit kirtzuf. The Gemara answers, Lechem belechem michlif. Different forms of lechem people will confuse. In other words, if according to review, of course, if we allow you to check for chometz after the Zman Iser, you're going to come to eat from it. Whereas kidur bekirtzuf lo michlif, by our allowing you to do kidur, you're not going to confuse that with kirtzuf. That's as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned. The Rabbanan hold that one will switch them around, and therefore don't allow him to do kirtzuf, because that will cause him, or that will enable him to confuse, that will cause him to be confused, and he'll come to do kirud as well, which is strictly forbidden. Before we begin the Mishnah, let us just glance at the side under our Nosei heading. Machlokes Rabbi Meir Rabbi Huda, we will see a Tanaic controversy, Ad Mosai Oichlim Chometz Be'erev Pesach, until what time does one eat Chometz, or is one entitled to eat Chometz on the 14th of Nisan, which is Erev Pesach. Before we get into the actual text, let's just review something that we have discussed in the past, the hours of the day. We will be speaking about a day that is measured from Nates until Shkia, breaking that into 12 hours, starting with 6 a.m. as being the beginning of the first hour of the day. So on the side, you see we have a little chart on the inside margin. Hour number 1 is from 6 to 7 a.m., hour number 2 from 7 till 8, and further down the line, as you can see. After the 6th hour of the day, in other words, at the beginning of the 7th hour of the day, which is from noon onwards, the Torah prohibits the consumption of chometz. Prior to that, the Isurim that we will talk about are of a rabbinic nature. The Mishnah, Rabbi Meir Omer, Oichlin Kol Chamesh, one can eat till the end of the 5th hour, till 11 a.m. V'sorfe b'tchila shesh, and from 11 a.m. he starts burning the chometz. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Oichlin Kol Arba, you have the first 4 hours of the day to eat chometz. That will be until 10. The toilin kol chomesh, and things are left in balance, we'll say, in the hanging during the 5th hour, from 10 till 11. In other words, there's at that time, so there's no eating. However, there's no obligation to burn. The Rashi says toilin kol chomesh vieno ochel. Person does not eat during the 5th hour. The toy person can come to make a mistake. The savor al shvius shehi chamishis. A person can actually confuse the 7th hour with the 5th hour. And if we allow him to eat during the 5th hour, he might come to eat during the 7th hour, and that's already an Easter doraisa. Umiu lisrof eino tzorich. He doesn't have to burn during the 5th hour. Umachil lebehemto. He can feed his animals yet the chometz. Avol shishis afbano osur midrabanan. However, during the 6th hour, from 11 till 12, there's an issur derabanan to benefit from the chometz, which will include even the feeding of one's animals. Gzeiro mishum shvius, as a ruling or a fence against the 7th hour. The Mishnah continues. V'odama Rabbi Huda. After Rabbi Huda tells us Toilin Kol Chomesh and Sorfin Tchilas Sheish, he also says Shtei Chalois Shel Toida Psulos Munochos Al Gavu Itzdava. There are two chalos, are loaves that were made of chometz that were part of a korban toda. Korban toda was a sacrifice in addition to the sheep that was the animal section of that sacrifice. There were also 40 loaves that accompanied the korban todah. 10 of the 40 loaves were chometz loaves. The other 30 were matzah loaves. When we speak about matzah loaves, it means non-fermented loaves. So Rabbi Yehuda says that there were two chometz loaves of the todah that were posel, that were on the Agafu Itztaba. That's an expression that the Gemara will clarify in the Gemara itself. But the Itztaba was a type of, we'll say, benches or seats that were located around the perimeter of the Beis HaMikdash. And here we're referring to two loaves that were placed over there. We should say we said the Beis Hamikdash, but more accurately, Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount. So around the Temple Mount, you have these this Itzdabah, and there were two loaves placed on this. Kolzman Shemunachos Kolam Ochlin. These served as a type of public clock, namely, as long as the loaves were in place on the Itzdabah, so that would be a sign people can still eat their chomet. Niklo Achas. If one of them, or upon the removal of one of them at the beginning of the fifth hour, toilin, lo yochlin, lo sarfin, that's that middle time where things are hanging in the balance. And nitlu shtehen, ischilu kolam sarfin, when the two loaves were removed, when the second loaf was removed, that would be a sign that it's time to start burning the chametz. Rabban Gamliel Omer, chulin, ne'echolin kol arba, utruma kol chomesh, V'sarfin v'tchilas sheish. Rabbi Gamliel introduces a topic we haven't seen till now, and that is truma. Truma is a tithe that's given to kohanim. And if you have, let's say, chometz that is truma, you're not allowed in general to destroy truma. It's also lahafsid kochim biyodayim when you are still able to eat it. So we see that we stretch out or extend the time for truma consumption. However, when it comes to the beginning of the sixth hour, there we start the burning. And that's because most people can easily come to confuse the sixth hour with after the sixth hour. Before we begin the Gemara, let us glance at the side where we have a topic heading and an indication that this is a very long topic. It will continue till Yud Beis Omid Beis. Ad kamo hefresh yocholios bein edusam shel shnei edim. How much discrepancy can there be between the testimony of two witnesses, vadayin edusam kayemes, and nevertheless the discrepancy is not considered a real discrepancy, and the testimony will still last. In other words, someone might say that an event took place on the second hour of the day, and another might say it took place on the third hour of the day, but they're really talking about the same event, so that as far as the testimony is concerned, they're referring to the same event. The fact that there appears to be a discrepancy in their testimony, that's a function of the human inability to be precise in their times, in their timing. Not everyone was necessarily wearing an atomic watch enabling them to see exactly the time, but rather people would base themselves on the position of the sun in the sky, and that could result in some discrepancy, and yet it's not really a discrepancy. It's just a function of the inability of the human being to be exact in his timing. By way of additional background to the realm of testimony, one of the main points or pillars of testimony is the ability or the potential ability for the testimony recited that we hear to be refuted by time and place. In other words, anyone who testifies, especially when we're talking about a group of witnesses, a unit of two witnesses constitutes your basic unit of testimony in Jewish law, those two witnesses can obviously be contradicted by other witnesses. That's what we call edus b'hakosha, contradicted testimony. There's another form of contradiction that is of central importance to this sukkia, and that is called hazoma. Hazoma is a situation, it's a very specific situation, where witnesses are challenged by virtue of time and place. A simple example: if two witnesses come and testify that at noon time on Sunday, they witnessed a particular event, and two other witnesses would come along and say, we don't know how you can testify about that event on at noontime at such and such a place, because at noon on Sunday, you were with us in another location. That's called hazoma. So that in the initial testimony, it's essential that they provide enough information or accurate enough information that enables them to be subjected, them we mean the original set of witnesses, to be subjected to hazoma, to be challenged by virtue of time and place, as we stated in our example. Let us now turn to the Gemara. Tanan Hosam. You can see this section of Gemara opens with a Tanaic source, and we're talking about testimony. Echod Omer Bishnaya Bechodesh, Ve'echod Omer Bishlosha Bechodesh. One witness says that the event took place on the second of the month, and another witness says it took place on the third of the month. Eduson Kayemes. These witnesses are accurate. They constitute a legitimate set of witnesses. Shezeh yodea biburo shel chodesh, vezeh eino yodea biburo shel chodesh. They're talking about the same event regarding the same day. So how do you account for the discrepancy of one saying the second of the month and the other saying the third of the month? The answer is that the one that said the second of the month, well, he's aware that the previous month was extended by one day. And that's by virtue of the fact that the witnesses that testify about seeing the new moon phase, the new crescent of the moon, which represents the beginning of a new lunar cycle, that those witnesses had not appeared in court on day 30 with their testimony, causing the court to establish that, well, this month is extended by one day, so that day 30 in fact remains day 30, and day 31 becomes the new month. So when the new month starts, the counting will say delayed by one day. So when a witness says, I saw something on day 2 of a particular month, he happens to be someone that's aware that the previous month was extended by one day. The other witness who said that the event took place on the 3rd of the month, he is referring to the same event that the first witness spoke about. However, he was not aware that the previous month had been extended, so that the previous month ended on day 29, day 30 automatically becoming day 1, and hence, when he says day 3, he is referring to the same point in time that the other witness was referring to when he said day 2. Continuing in this source, Echad Omer B'Shloisha V'Echad Omer B'Chamisha Edusan B'Teila. If one witness says an event took place on day 3 and another witness says it took place on day 5, so they're not talking about the same event. There's a discrepancy of 2 days in their testimony, and hence the edus, the testimony, is void. So far, that was section 1 of this source, which really is of less centrality to our discussion as opposed to what we're now going to learn. Echad Omer b'shtei shos, ve'echad Omer b'sholosh shos, eduson kaimes. One witness says a particular event took place at the second hour of the day. That would be at between 7 and 8. That's the second hour of the day. And or you could say 7 o'clock. And the other witness says b'sholosh, echad Omer b'sholosh shos. And the other witness says at 8 o'clock, eduson kaimes. Their testimony stands. If, however, one witness says at the third hour and the other says at the fifth hour, their testimony is void. That's Rabbi Meir's approach. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Edusim Kayemis, that even if one says the event took place at the third hour of the day and the other one says at the fifth hour, their testimony stands. Echad Omer b'chomesh v'echad Omer b'sheva, if one says an event took place at the fifth hour and the other at the seventh hour, Edusan b'teilo, then their witness, their testimony is void. Shebechomesh chamo b'mizrach u'b'sheva chamo b'marav. At the fifth hour of the day, the sun is still in the eastern part of the sky. At the seventh hour, the sun is already in the western part of the sky. So there's no basis for explaining away such a discrepancy. It's so obvious that the fifth hour is not the seventh hour. So how could, if one witness is saying that he saw an event took place at the fifth hour, that's not the same event that the other witness was talking about when he said it took place during the seventh hour. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a rather elaborate marking system that accompanies this. We have a bow tie, and on the side of the Gemara, we see a Mivneh heading. The bow tie highlights Machlokes Abaye v'Rava. We'll see a controversy between Abaye and Rava, Lahazbir HaTanoim, to explain the Tanoim who are highlighted in the Gemara with a double underline, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda. Under Abaye's point, we will see an Aleph and a Beis. The Aleph and Beis represent Shnei Lishonos B'Abaye. So when we get to the point in the Gemara, it's five lines from the bottom, you'll see an Ika the Army that's squiggle underline, representing a second version of Abaye. In addition, we will also be using a diamond to highlight the expression Maisa. Maisa in this Gemara is a reference to the event being testified about. The Maisa, Kihave, the event, when it took place at this and this an hour, as we will see in the Gemara. But once again, to highlight the overview structurally, Abaye presents his version of the Machlokas Tanoim, and in fact, there are two versions of Abaye. And when you get to Yud Beis Amud Aleph, you will see Rava giving his presentation about the eight lines from the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. The approach of the Gemara is to eventually tie in the issue of what we learned about the testimony and the acceptable and unacceptable discrepancy, people confusing hours, and eventually that being tied in to the opinions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda regarding how much time they will allow for the eating of chometz and not coming to making a mistake and erring in something more serious. As we begin the Gemara, we're going to notice a dashed underline being used and a note that's accompanied by a star on the other margin. And at that point, we've written Bocharnu lahavlit b'kivkuv rakes tchilas divrei Abaye v'Rava. We've chosen to highlight simply the beginning parts of Abaye and Rava with this dashed underline. Kidei lahavlit hahevdel, to accentuate the difference between their approaches. Aval yesh lo sim lev, but we should pay attention, shegam bedivrei Rabbi Yehuda yesh hevdelim. There are differences not only in Abaye and Rava's presentation of Rabbi Meir, there are differences in their presentation of Rabbi Yehuda as well. Let us now start the Gemara. Omar Abaye, Kishitinsalomar Ledivre Rabbi Meir. This expression Tinsalomar means when you look into and analyze Rabbi Meir, Ein Odom Toya Velo Klum. According to Rabbi Meir, a person does not make any mistake. In other words, when a person says a particular time, he is referring to that moment. And there's no range of time that a person is referring to when he is expected to make when he makes reference to time. L'divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Toya Chatzi Shah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a certain margin of error that should be taken into account when a person states time. And here the Gemara explains. L'divrei Rabbi Meir, Ein Adam Toya Velo Klum. When a person says a particular time, he is not making any mistake. And we're going to be using the examples in the source where we saw Rabbi Meir says if one says second hour and the other fellow says third hour, they are talking about the same point in time and they form a unit of testimony, two witnesses. They join with one another. According to Rabbi Meir, who's a person does not make any mistake, Maisa Kihave, the event that they are talking about that took place, the Mepak Tarti Umayel Plas. It was the end of the seventh hour, the end of the second hour, the beginning of the third hour, which you can see we've written in is a reference to 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, and that you can make reference to the chart before. At the end of the second hour, you find 8 o'clock, and the beginning of the third hour is 8 o'clock. They are referring to 8 o'clock. One just happens to call it the second hour, but he's referring to the end of the second hour. And the other witness that said third hour, he's referring to the beginning of the third hour, which is the same point in time. The ha de ka'amar shtayim, the witness that said the second hour, but Selstein is referring to the end of the second. The ha de ka'amar shalosh, the witness that said it, the event took place at the third hour, but tchilas shalosh, he's referring to the beginning of the third hour. Again, 8 o'clock. L'divrei Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who mentioned that if one witness says an event took place at the third hour, and I witnessed a murder at the third hour, and the other witness says, I witnessed a murder at the fifth hour, and Rabbi Yehuda says they are talking about the same event. How does Rabbi Yehuda come to that? Because Adam Toya Chatzi Shah, a person can err by a half hour. Maisa Kihave, the event that took place, the murder that took place, but Palga the Arba Have, it took place at the middle of the fourth hour. Well, the fourth hour begins at 9 o'clock, so the middle of the fourth hour is 9:30. That's when the event actually took place. The high dekomar shalosh, the witness that said, I saw the murder at the third hour of the day, besof shalosh. He's referring to the end of the third hour, which is 9 o'clock. The katoi palga de shaita lekameh. And he makes a mistake of a half hour, ahead, meaning where the actual event took place, 9:30, he timed it a half hour before. V'hai dekomar chomesh, and he who said that he saw the murder take place at the fifth hour, betchilas chomesh, he's referring to, in his mind, he's referring to the beginning of the fifth hour, that's 10 o'clock. V'kotoi palga deshaito achorei, l'achorei, and he in his testimony, is delaying the event by a half hour. But that's the function of a person being off. A person is acceptable, or it's within the realm of possibility of a person being off by a half hour. And that being the case, they are really talking about the same event, so they join up to form a unit of testimony. Iko diamri omar Abaye, another version of Abaye's presentation of Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda. Kishetimsa lomar l'divrei Rebbe Meir odom toye mashu. When you analyze Shitas Rebbe Meir, you see that a person can be off by a fraction of a moment. But there is room for error, but a fraction of a moment. L'divrei Rebbe Yehuda Adam Toya Sha'a Umashu. According to Rebbe Yehuda, you can see that a person can be referring to a particular event and be off by an hour and a fraction. L'divrei Rebbe Meir Adam Toya Mashu. Here, once again, we're explaining or elaborating on that which Rabbi Meir said, one testifies about the second hour, and the other testifies mentioning the third hour, and they are talking about the same event. Maisa Kihave, the event that they are testifying about, was Oy Besoif Shtaim, either it was at the end of the second hour, we'll call that 7:59, Have, Oy Betchilas Shalosh, or it was at 8 o'clock. V'chad minayu toya mashu, and one of them is inaccurate by a fragment of a minute. L'divrei Rabbi Yehuda, adam toya shol mashu, a person could be off by an hour and a fraction. Maisa kihave, the event that took place. Again, Rabbi Yehuda is the one that said above. You can have two witnesses, one testifying about the event having taken place at the third hour and the other at the fifth hour, and they are really talking about the same event. And how could that be? Well, Maisa Kihavi, the event that they are testifying about was Oy Besoif Shalosh. It took place, the murder or the loan that they saw, whatever event, took place at the end of the fifth hour. It's either at 8:59, Oy Betchilas Chomesh, or at 10 o'clock. That's when the event took place, either at 8:59 or 10. V'chad minayu, and one of these two witnesses, Kotoi Shol Mashu, and he's off by an hour and a fraction. So that if, let's say, assume the event took place at the end of the third hour, that's 8:59, and one witness said third hour, so he's talking about the end of the third hour. The other witness that said fifth hour, he's referring to 10 o'clock, but a person could be off by an hour and a fraction, so his 10 o'clock really is 8:59, and he's just inaccurate. By virtue of that, that's the realm, that's the margin of error that people are capable of making. As the Gemara says at the top, v'chad minayu, at the top of Yud Beis Omer Aleph, v'chad minayu kotoi shah umashu. One of them is off by an hour and a fraction. Also, Rav Huna, braid Rav Yehuda, omra l'shmaitze kamei derava. That means Rav Huna, braid Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yehuda, went and said over Abaye's teaching to Rava, kame in front of Rava, Omar. Rava raises a question. Notice the question lasts a number of lines. And this, the thrust of this question might require some background. We spoke already about the concept of Edus Bahazoma, testimony that we can contradict through challenging the witnesses regarding time and place. And there's also the concept of Edus Bahakosha, inaccuracy in testimony. Another principle that, and when we say inaccuracy in testimony, that could be a direct challenge to what the witnesses are saying. In other words, they're saying that the event took place on a given day. Other witnesses are saying it did not take place on a given day. That's a direct challenge. That's not hazoma, because hazoma is a very limited form of contradiction where the challenge is expressed in the following say text or version or language, whereby the second set of witnesses says to the first set, how could you have testified about an event at such and such a time in such and such a place when you were with us at that time in the other place, in another place? There's another concept before we can get into the Gemara that we should be familiar with, and that is that it's our job, the job of the court, to strive to be lenient within the boundaries, of course, of the law, in order to find leniency for the defendant. When we're talking about a capital case, you've got someone that's on trial by a court of judges, and they are judging him on a matter of life and death, that if he's found guilty, he'll be put to death. So the Torah expects the judges to find a hole in the testimony of the witnesses. Witnesses are subject to cross-examination, if you will, that's referred to as drishos and chakiros, different forms of questioning that involve time and place and other pertinent information. And we try to find an error in their testimony that would cause their testimony to be voided, to be botel. That's based on a pasuk that says v'shoftu ha'eda v'hitzilu ha'eda, where the eda, which is the court, has to try to save the defendant. That's the spirit of things, and with that in mind, let us proceed in the Gemara. Omar, Rava reacts to what he heard in the name of Abaye. He says, Uma ilu daikinon bahani sadi. If we were to be precise with regard to the testimony of these witnesses, Tahaydekomar Shalosh is the one that says third hour, Betchilas Shalosh. Maybe he's referring to the beginning of the third hour, Tahaydekomar Chomesh, and the one that says fifth hour, Besof Chomesh. That is a reference to the end of the fifth hour, Vahavyo Edus Mukreshes. Well, according to Abaye, the gap would be so great that it would be a type of testimony that we would call contradicted. Whereas the two witnesses, one is contradicting the other. By one saying third hour, he is referring to the beginning of the third hour. And the other saying fifth hour, he might be referring to the end of the fifth hour. The gap between those times is almost 3 hours. And according to Abaye, people don't make an error, are not going to make an error of 3 hours. And as a result, according to Abaye, that would be edus mukheshes, velo katlinon. And if you have edus mukheshes, you have contradictory testimony, you wouldn't kill the defendant. Ve'ana nekum v'naktil misfeka. And we are going to arise and kill the defendant based on what Abaye was saying. Abaye was drawing their times near to one another. In other words, when Abaye explained third hour, he said he is referring to the end of the third hour. The one who said the fifth hour is referring to the beginning of the fifth hour, thereby drawing the times together, showing that the discrepancy would be just an hour and a fraction. However, could we not have taken third to mean beginning of third hour, and the one who said fifth hour could have meant the end of the fifth hour? And yet Abaye is on a matter of doubt. He's drawing their times together, close to one another, and we're going to then proclaim that the testimony is accurate because people's margin of error is an hour and a fraction. But the Torah says, v'shoftu eda v'tzilu eda. The Torah says that the court, when judging, is also supposed to strive for saving. This leads Rava to present his analysis. And that's what the Gemara continues to say, Ela Omar Rava. But before we read that, let us take a look at Rashi. On the third line from the top, Omar Rava, v'chi efshu lomar she'ein toilin tos elo mashu l'Rabbi Meir v'sho mashu l'Rabbi Yehuda. Is it possible that we explain margin of error according to Rabbi Meir as a fraction of time, and according to Rabbi Yehuda an hour and a fraction? In Cain, hechato mitzaref eduson. If that be the case, how is it that we're joining the testimony of the one who says third hour with the one that says fifth hour, according to Rabbi Yehuda? Who says that the one that testified about the earlier testimony time was a reference to the end of that hour, and the later testimony witness was referring to the beginning of that hour? Kedei lekarvon zeitzel ze uletzar v'duson, with the seeming effort on Abaye's part in explaining the Tanoim so as to draw near the two testimonies. Shalote b'neim elo shiur tos adam. So as to create a situation that they are testifying about the same event because this is the margin of error. Uma ilu daikis bahani sadi l'chalek edusan. If you would have been, precise in analyzing the testimony of these witnesses or analyzing their testimony to split their times, Motzis Lemeimar, you could have come out saying, Hai Domar Sholosh, Betchila Sholosh. The one that said third hour was a reference to the beginning of the third hour. V'hai Domar Chomesh, B'sof Chomesh. The one that said the end of the fifth hour is reference to the end of the fifth hour. V'yesh Chiluk B'neim, Sholosh Shos Choser Mashu. And then you would have a gap of time of almost 3 hours. V'kevon D'ein Odom Toya Kol Kach. And since a person, according to Abaye, doesn't make such an error, there isn't such a large margin of error when people speak. Nechlekes edusav avi mukheshes, their testimony splits and is contradictory. V'lo kachminon le lahai, and how is it that we could end up killing the defendant when this possibility exists? V'ana nekum v'nikra v'edusav k'teshor egzeh, would we arise and draw near their testimony? Does the Torah not say that the Eidah, the court, must strive to save the defendant who's there being judged on capital charges? Elovadai, but rather, says Rava, midukomar edusin kayemes, from the fact that one can say an early hour, and the other says a later hour, and we say their edus lasts. They are considered an accurate, honest unit of testimony. Shma mino de svira lahu. It must be that the tanoim hold the afilu ata mechalkon kemo asher tuchal. Even if you split their times as much as you can, v'lomar shamukdam niskavin l'tchilas shah, and maintain that the early witness testifying about the early hours a reference to the beginning of that hour. Vamuchar lusofa, and the one who states the later time is referring to the end of that hour. Yesh l'chol litlos betos, you shall still assume that as within the legitimate margin of error. The einchol yochol hakhisham, and you can't pose them as contradictory. Sha'odam toya b'chol zos, a person does make such a major error in his time. That's Rava's problem with Abaye. Let's try to say it in a slightly more abbreviated fashion. According to Rava, if you take Abaye at his word that early testimony is a reference to the end of that hour, and the later testimony is a beginning of that hour, does the possibility not exist that each witness was talking about the other extremes of their respective testimonies? And according to Abaye, that is beyond the realm of error. How is it that we could kill the defendant based on such testimony, third hour and fifth hour? Therefore, Rava is going to tell us that the margin of error that a person might make, or the margin of error for a person, is much greater than that of Abaye. Hence, even when we try to split the two testimonies apart time-wise from one another, it's still within the margin of error. And hence, they join up because they, in fact, are talking about the same event. Elo Omar Rava. We continue in the Gemara. L'divrei Rabbi Meir, Adam Toya Shtei Shos Choser Mashu. According to Rabbi Meir, a person, when he makes reference to a particular time, he might be off by almost 2 hours. L'divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Toya Sholosh Shos Choser Mashu. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a person can be off by practically 3 hours. And as we saw earlier in Abaye, the Gemara specifies or explains these 2 points more elaborately within Rava's presentation of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. L'divrei Rabbi Meir, Odom Toya Shtei Shos, Choser Mashu, according to Rabbi Meir, the margin of error of a person is almost 2 hours. Maisa Kihave, the event in question, O Betchilas Shtayim, O Besoif Shalosh, took place either at the beginning of the 7th hour or the end of the 8th hour, which we can call 8:59. V'chad Minayu, Kotoi Shtei Shos, Choser Mashu. And one of those 2 witnesses is off, or could be off, by almost 2 hours. L'divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Toya Shalosh Shos Choser Mashu. Rabbi Yehuda spoke about 2 witnesses, one saying 3rd hour and the other saying 5th hour. A person, that's a reflection of a person being off by in his citation of time by almost 3 hours. Maisa kihave, the event in question took place o betchilas shalosh o besof chomesh. It took place either at 8 o'clock or 10:59. It's practically 11 o'clock. There's a 3 hour gap minus a mashu, minus a negligible amount between these two. V'chad minayo kotoi shalosh shos choser mashu, and one of the 2 witnesses might very well be off by practically 3 hours. But that's a function of inaccuracy on a person's part, but there's a margin of error when it comes to his telling of time, but he in fact is testifying about the same event. Hence, as far as testimony is concerned, they stand up in court. Up to this point then in the Gemara, we've seen a presentation of a machlokes tanoim, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, within the realm of testimony, and how far off a person can be by virtue of we'll call the margin of error that a person might make when in fact he is not lying, but he's talking about the same event as the previous witness, as the previous testimony of the other witness might have. In fact, they were talking about the same event. Before we conclude, let's just remind you that we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara, as it continues, will then tie in the sukya of testimony to eventually to the issue of chometz. However, before that, the Gemara will discuss the issue of hazoma. So, Mirza Shem, in our next shiur, we will continue with this particular topic. So, with that, we conclude our shiur for today.